Merlin's almost pathetically grateful when Arthur returns from town to carelessly drop a handful of books on his bed, and then his heart skips a beat to see Jane Eyre as one of them. Merlin loves Jane Eyre. He first read it when he was 12, and he was entranced even with the bits he didn't quite understand. He got his mum to rent all the film and television adaptations she could find and watched them repeatedly. He even used to have a postcard stuck on his wall that he bought at the Bronte house in Haworth. It had his favorite quote from the book on it. "I am no bird, and no net ensnares me. I am a free human being with an independent will." Merlin can appreciate the irony of reading that quote now, in his tiny cell, but it still sends the same small thrill through him as it did the first time he ever saw it. Arthur doesn't understand.
"We had to do it in school. It was so boring."
He sat on the table outside the cell, ostensibly fixing an old clock radio he'd found in the kitchen cupboard, but he keeps breaking off the repair attempt to talk to Merlin. Merlin sat cross-legged on the bed, holding the book in his hand. "It's not boring at all."
"It is, though. Blah, 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 I'm an orphan. Blah, 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 everyone thinks I'm stupid and willful. Blah, 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 this hot mean guy keeps picking on me."
"It's about the triumph of the spirit," Merlin says, not caring how earnest he sounds. This book is important to him, and it irritates him to hear Arthur dismiss it. Jane gets abused or ignored by everyone around her, but she stays true to herself and just carries on going. She makes happiness for herself despite all the odds being against her.
"Wow, over-identify much, Merlin?"
Arthur says with a slight sneer. Merlin flushes because, yes, he does identify with Jane. He always has, and he hates the way Arthur makes it sound so idiotic now.
"It's not over-identifying," he snaps. "Everyone sees themselves in their favorite characters. You non-magicals do it all the time, and your role models are everywhere. God forbid someone like me might want to do the same."
Arthur looks abashed at Merlin's outburst. He goes a bit pink behind the ears and mutters something.
"What was that?" Merlin challenges. "Sorry, okay? I was a bit... rude."
Merlin's slightly taken aback at Arthur's apology, but he just gives a sort of stiff nod of acknowledgement.
"Maybe I should read it again,"
Arthur says, clearly trying to be conciliatory for reasons Merlin doesn't quite understand. But his anger gets swept aside in his eagerness for Arthur to give the book another go. "He should," he says. "It's honestly brilliant." A mischievous grin crosses his face. "Plus, it's got a character with magic in it." Arthur's eyebrows shoot up.
"I may not have paid much attention in class, but I'm pretty sure I'd remember that."
"Mrs. Rochester? The so-called madwoman in the attic? You know mad used to be a synonym for magic in a lot of cases, don't you? It's patently obvious to me that Mr. Rochester freaked out when his new wife arrived and she turned out to be a magical, so he locked her up." Arthur stares at him.
"What a load of rubbish."
Merlin shrugs. "Writers used to quote that kind of thing all the time. It wasn't socially acceptable to talk about magic in print until the 20th century, really."
Sounds like a flimsy theory," Arthur says skeptically.
"Yeah, my English teacher thought the same, except he was less polite about it when he ripped my essay up in front of everyone and made me turn my desk to face the wall for the rest of the lesson." Merlin says this quite lightheartedly and is surprised to see that Arthur looks vaguely discomfited.
"Seriously? He sounds like a real dick."
"Yeah, well... he wasn't the only teacher at our school that hated magicals, but he was probably the least subtle about it," Merlin says, shrugging.
"Did that kind of thing happen a lot?"
Arthur says, and he's completely abandoned all pretense of fixing the radio now. "Sometimes. There were only two other magicals in my whole school. Most teachers would just act like I wasn't there." Arthur's frowning.
"That's harsh."
"I didn't mind flying under the radar sometimes. It was only a problem when the other kids would pick on me and the teachers would just look away like they couldn't see it."
"You got picked on?"
Merlin pauses, thinking of how best to answer that question.
It's slightly painful to look back now and remember how excited he was to finally go to school and make the friends he'd never had before. It took him a while to realize that the kids at St. Hilda's didn't want to be his friends any more than the kids that played out on his street did. Having magic appeared to be the modern equivalent of being a biblical leper. But primary school wasn't too bad. The kids were at least civil in class, even if their mothers hustled them away from Merlin at the school gates, and his attempts to invite them round for tea were always refused. Secondary school was a rude awakening, however. Merlin had just about gotten used to being an overlooked loner when he made the unpleasant discovery that his new classmates actively disliked him. Being a magical had only gotten him ignored before. Now his peers were paying him entirely too much attention. Kids wrote rude words on his locker, filled his backpack with rocks, stole his clothes from the changing room. In more extreme cases, they chased him home or cornered him on the playground and beat him up. Hunith complained to the school a few times, but nothing was done about it. Teachers were always mysteriously absent when he was being pinned up against a wall or having his arm bent up his back in PE. They only seemed to materialize in the later years, when he started fighting back. Then he could be sure of getting detention or being sent to the headmaster's office for troublemaking. The unfairness of it stung him bitterly at the time, and he thinks that feeling never really went away. His life experience had naturally led him to a job which was all about trying to make sure little magical kids would never feel alone like that again. Maybe that's why he used to relate so much to Jane Eyre's school days. She couldn't catch a break either. He shares an extremely edited version of his school experiences to Arthur, who looks distinctly uneasy by the end. It's a look that Merlin's starting to recognize on Arthur. Whenever he talks about any kind of anti-magical prejudice or discrimination he's faced in the past, Arthur begins to ooze discomfort. Merlin thought at first Arthur was just signaling his boredom and or lack of caring, but he's not so sure anymore. Arthur looks almost guilty. It ties into Merlin's theory that Arthur hasn't quite swallowed his father's rhetoric hook, line, and sinker. The pathetic defenses he puts up for those trashy anti-magical books he reads alone suggests that he doesn't believe half of what Arkstone preaches. Not for the first time, Merlin wonders how Arthur got mixed up in all this. He just doesn't seem the type. It's not just prejudice that Arthur seems guilty about, though. He's never offered an explicit apology for what Val and Senra did, but he seems very keen to reassure Merlin that he didn't condone their actions. They're having dinner one night when Arthur states the complete obvious. He never liked them. "What's not to like?" Merlin says lightly. "All of my best friends have uncontrollable rage issues."
"Val's always been like that," Arthur says grimly as he jabs at his bean burger. "Anytime someone needs roughing up or threatening, Uther sends him out."
"How can you work for a company that even employs people to do that?"
"I don't know,"
Arthur says in that same dead tone he always uses when Merlin asks about his loyalty to Arkstone. It sounds to the untrained ear like Arthur doesn't care at all, but Merlin's beginning to know the other man a little better now. Just the way Arthur's gripping his fork lets Merlin know how unhappy he really is with what Arkstone does. He decides to take pity on him for once and change the subject. "People like Val crop up everywhere. Magicals too, to be fair. I knew a right bruiser in Washington used to go along to the riots just to start fights and beat people up."
"Yeah?"
"Yeah. God, he was a weird bloke. Really hardcore anarcho-communist. Wanted a total dissolution of the state. Always quoting these mad pamphlets he downloaded from the dark web."
"He's one up on Val, then. Not sure he can actually read."
Merlin sniggers.
"And Senrit, Jesus Christ,"
Arthur continues, looking vaguely pleased to have amused Merlin.
"I wouldn't be surprised if Arkstone found him hanging upside down in a cave somewhere."
Merlin goes a bit cold at the mention of Senrit and looks down at his plate. He hasn't forgotten the feel of Senrit's hands trailing across his skin, and he doesn't think he will for a while. That moment had awoken a different kind of helplessness in him, one he can't brush off as easily as he can Val's bullying. Arthur doesn't seem to have noticed Merlin's discomfort.
I honestly think my father only keeps him on so Val can have a sidekick. He can't exactly match Val for menace.
Rather be alone with Val than Senrit, Martin mutters, and Arthur looks surprised.
What? Why? You said Val was the one who did the hitting.
Yeah, but Senrit was... he...
Martin can't find the words, and he doesn't really want to talk about it anyway. He shrugs and picks up his fork again, only to see Arthur put his down with a clatter.
What?
Nothing, nothing. He just tried to unnerve me.
How?
Merlin swirls a few peas around his plate.
Threats and stuff, he says briefly.
To hit you.
Merlin wishes he'd never brought the subject up.
No, to
touch me.
He mumbles the last bit out and then risks a glance at Arthur. Arthur looks confused for a second, and then his face darkens.
Did he? He asks flatly. Touch you? What did he do?
Not what you're thinking, Merlin says plainly, seeing the fear in Arthur's eyes. Just groped me a little.
There's a pause, and then Arthur bangs his hand down hard on the table, and Merlin jumps.
The fucking prick,
Arthur says, and his voice is raw.
I knew he was a creep, but I didn't know he...
He looks straight at Merlin.
I should have been there to protect you.
Merlin didn't expect to hear that.
I protected myself, he says at last, and Arthur looks slightly mollified.
You hit him.
I screamed, Merlin says wryly. I do that sometimes.
The last time had been when he was 18 years old and his father had been shot in front of him, but he doesn't particularly feel like sharing that with Arthur.
He's an animal,
Arthur says, shaking his head.
My father needs to know.
What's the likelihood your father would care? Merlin says bluntly.
My dad's not a monster,
Arthur snaps.
Of course he'd care if someone was...
Merlin remembers the domestic abuse workshop and feels a sudden rush of rage at Arthur's naivety. Magicals are nearly twice as likely to be sexually assaulted as non-magicals, and 5 times less likely to report it to the police, he says angrily.
Why do you think that is? It's because we know that the authorities don't really care what happens to us, that the chances of us being believed or even listened to are nearly non-existent. Forgive me if I don't assume that your father... the very man who ordered my kidnapping would lose any sleep about the idea of Senrit raping me.
The moment the word rape is out of his mouth, he feels sick. He wishes he could swallow it, forget that there had even been a possibility of Senrit doing that to him, but he can't. He puts his plate on the floor instead, convinced he'll vomit if he eats another bite. The trauma of Senrit's harassment is finally catching up with him. He hasn't faced up to how truly afraid he'd been until now. He'd locked all that terror away, but it's bubbling up to the surface, and he's not ready to deal with it. He's aware of Arthur's eyes on him, and he turns away. He hears the chair scrape across the floor, and assumes Arthur's leaving to give him some space, so he's surprised when he hears the keys in the cell door a second later.